This is Around the Rim with LaChyna Robinson.
Hello, Around the Rim fans. Welcome to a new, fun, and exciting episode of Around the Rim. I am your producer, Tarika Foster Brasby, and joining me today as guest host, I have two of the most wonderful, amazing voices that you will hear across women's basketball and beyond. Studio host, play-by-play announcer, reporter, broadcaster. Is there any other word that you want to use to describe these two?
Orange hoodie wearer.
Orange hoodie gang, okay? I've got Lisa Byington and Christy Winter-Scott joining us today. Hey, ladies. Thanks so much for coming.
Hey, thank you for having us.
I am excited about having you guys. I haven't had Lisa on the show in what seems like forever. Christy joined us last show, and the demand for her was so high that we absolutely had
called her back.
Have her back.
And LaChyna texts me, and our relationship is so bad now that she said, I'm only going to have you on my show when I'm not on my show. So that's the only reason why I'm on here.
I know, right? And so, you know, LaChyna's been too busy for the podcast for like
a yes.
now, right?
Like, yes. Is that what they call it now?
Like, I'm about to start a petition. That's just like, you know what, LaChyna, if you can't do your job, LaChyna, then we need to, I don't know what we got to do. We got to do something. I don't know. But in the meantime, we're excited to have you two join us. We've got a packed show today. The playoffs are starting this week. I'm excited for the playoffs. I was telling Lisa before we were recording that I'm excited for the playoffs as a producer and a fan of the game. But I'm also kind of hating because I'm a Connecticut Sun fan and I just want us to win the whole thing. So that's just kind of the rut that I'm in right now. I just want us to win the whole thing. So there's that. What are you most excited about looking forward to the postseason? Christy, we'll start with you.
I'm just excited to see which teams can sustain their momentum that they had at the end of the year. And we'll just start with the 8 seed with Mystics, since that's the team that I'm based with here in DC. But I just think for Washington to win 5 of their last 6 and now to be in a single elimination situation with Phoenix, I mean, is that kind of mental fortitude going to carry over in that game? Could they be some kind of a spoiler? So I'm looking for that. But then moving on up to the top, and just with Seattle and Vegas and LA and Minnesota, I mean, just the way that they have been playing as well, I'm just intrigued to see if they can carry it over and take the run all the way to the end. I think that's why we all watch, right? That's why I'm so glad that sports are back, because it's just the unknown and the mental gymnastics of figuring how things may work out is just so much fun. And, you know, what a season, and what a season of sacrifice too for these women and the coaches, the officials, everybody. So just the inspiration that has come from that as well has been really awesome for me. I needed it.
I know, right? What about you, Lisa? What are you looking forward most to?
Well, along the same lines of Christy is I think I'm curious, outside of Seattle and Las Vegas, your 1 and 2 seeds. I'm curious at 3 through 8, you know, I feel like they all have a similar story in the fact they all had to sort of redefine themselves in different ways, whether that's because a star player was out because of injuries or players decided, you know, not to play in the bubble. And so they all, in my opinion, have similar stories in that way. I to me, you know, it was fascinating to watch the last day of the regular season, because I thought it was just a great example of what the league is. And I was more fascinated with the race for 8th place than I was for the race for the 1 and the 2 seed, for obvious reasons. You know, not having a home court, it doesn't mean as much to be 1 versus 2. But just the desire, the heart, the effort that, you know, 3, sometimes 4 teams at the end of the season were fighting to get to the playoffs. Christy, in my opinion, saw one of the best stories in the league this year, up close and personal, and doing some of the Washington Mystics games. You know, Mike Tebow just did an incredible job, and sort of when we talk about redefining teams. But now we have some teams like Chicago Sky, who I got to see, you know, game in and game out this year, and they've had a 4-day break now, you know, and it's the first time this year, it's the longest break that they've had. So what was a team that some people considered as a sleeper team at the beginning of the year, and they've gone through some redefining changes with no Azare Stevens and Diamond DeShields. But what does this four-day break do for a team like Chicago or for some other teams who now have some actual time to practice, which the coaches now love?
Right. Yeah, these are great points that you guys bring up, and it's actually really scary. I mean, I tease about being a Connecticut fan, but we are the one that have to see this Chicago team that is now resting, that can at any moment score 100 points on you, that has the great Courtney Vandersloot and Allie Quigley leading the helm. So it's a very exciting time. You also think about the 7th and the 8th seed being Connecticut and Washington, the two teams who were the two teams left standing last year. So it's like, wow, at the beginning of this season, we knew players were missing. There was no Jonquil Jones for Connecticut. There was the new piece of adding DeWanna Bonner. How is that going, you know, to gel and the chemistry that she was going to bring? There was no Tina Charles. There was no Elena Deladon. Like, these are all questions. And I definitely was one of the ones who was like, well, you know, if they don't make it to the postseason this year, who can really blame them? Because they've got a lot of challenges to overcome. And they've pretty much shown us that we don't know what we're talking about. So what we have to now do is see how they're going to act, you know, now moving into this postseason. And I'm excited about it. We're going to talk about that on today's show. We've got Jantel Lavender joining the show. We've got the great Christy Tolliver joining the show. And then at the end of today's show, we're going to talk about the Antonelli Awards. I know you guys may or may not have heard of them, but trust and believe you will know them and come to love them as the seasons progress, because they're not going away and we absolutely love it. So Debbie Antonelli is going to join us. Please make sure that you guys are subscribing to Around the Rim. Rate, review, give us some love. If you give us negative reviews, I'm going to delete them. I'm joking. I have no ability to delete them. But we're hoping that you will all give us some great and wonderful reviews. Lisa, Christy, please tell the people where they can find you on social media. Lisa, let's start with you.
Just my first and last name. Pretty simple. Lisa Byington, LisaByington. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram primarily.
Christy?
Yeah, the same for me. Christy W. Scott, but I'm still holding on to my uniform number 51. And that's the same on Twitter and Instagram, ChristyWScott51.
Awesome. You can find LaChyna at LaChyna Robinson. Please harass her and tell her that you are sick of her being too busy for the podcast. You can find me at SheKnowsSports_ Twitter and Instagram. And please follow Around the Rim Pod at Around the Rim Pod. We also love to hear from our fans on Gmail. So aroundtherimpodcast@gmail.com. And without further ado, guys, let's get ready for the show.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
All right, we got the hoodie flow coming in here. It's with Jantel Lavender, a WNBA champ, and of course, a sixth player of the year. And personally, in my opinion, one of the best teammates, not only on the court, but in the broadcast booth as well. So I got an opportunity to broadcast some games with her last year and this year. You just couldn't stay away from kind of the broadcast medium, could you, Jantel?
No, it's too fun. And I love working with you. So I'm excited to be here today.
Awesome. Well, you know, not everyone knows maybe the updates on you, and obviously you've been sitting out this year with an injury to your foot. So why don't you just update everyone on how the rehab is going before we start talking about WNBA stuff?
Well, rehab is going good. I had to wait 3 months post-op to start doing anything. So September 15th, oddly, is the day is my 3 month mark. So I've been kind of just laying low, making sure I heal my foot completely so that I don't have to go back and do another revision surgery, because that's what I had to do. But it feels great. I feel good. My body feels good. My knees are getting rested, but I can start like full rehab and working out like October 1st. So I'm excited for that.
Awesome. And then you, like a lot of us WNBA fans, were glued to the TV in the final day of the regular season, weren't you?
Absolutely. I mean, it was some amazing games. The fact that you have two of the top teams playing against each other in Seattle and Vegas, and then Washington fighting for their lives to get the last playoff spot was just, I don't know, it was the whole house. My whole family was watching, and it's really exciting. And this season has been really, really exciting to watch.
And Jantel, when you are watching the games, and I know your competitive fire kicks in sometimes, how does that kind of energy fuel your rehab and your approach to rehab when you watch the games?
That is such a good question. I mean, honestly, you said it all. I'm a competitor. So not being out on the floor, knowing like certain positions, because it's funny when you're not playing the game, you see so much that you don't feel and see when you're actually playing the game. So, I mean, even being a broadcaster and analyzing the game in depth the way that I have been doing just kind of allows you to see the game from a different perspective. So it's situations where I'm like, oh my gosh, it's such an easy cut. But in the game, I'm doing the same stuff, you know? So I think that you just learn. It's kind of in a sense watching film, because these players are so talented and they do what I love to do. And you can just watch and see little places where you can improve your game. So it's been fun. And it has honestly made me want to, I told my friend yesterday, I was like, I just want to get out. I feel like I can run now. That's how pumped up But I'm definitely learning a lot, and it's so fun to watch all of these fantastic players.
Well, I'm glad you talked about putting on your analyst hat, because that's exactly what we're going to make you do next, and put on your analyst hat and talk about maybe the first round teams, and who do you think in these two games coming up are going to be the most dangerous?
I do feel there are going to be some dangerous teams all throughout the top eight, but Washington sneaking in there in these last couple wins that they've racked up against LA, the last game versus Atlanta, another hungry team, just shows that they're kind of locked in. And I attribute that to Coach Tebow. I think that he's fantastic, especially a coach that doesn't have pretty much his entire starting five, with the exception of Emma Meesterman. I think that he has done an amazing job to get into a playoff spot, and that speaks volumes of how great he is as a coach. I think Washington, obviously. I also think Connecticut is going to be a very dangerous team in the playoffs. Dawana Bonner has championship experience, and she knows how to turn it on when it's go time. And I think that her being locked in is going to be an extremely tough matchup for some teams. I mean, especially Chicago. They have kind of a losing slump here as of late. I think maybe losing last of the 5-6 games, but maybe in the playoffs, they can turn it on and understand that, hey, now it's do or die. But I do think Connecticut and Washington are going to be very dangerous in the first rounds.
Now, when you saw what Las Vegas was able to do yesterday, I know we were talking about, you know, the Mystics fighting for their lives to get in, but it was Vegas and Seattle fighting for the overall top seed and only a 2-point game. When you see Vegas doing what they've been able to do this season, what do you see occurring as the playoffs move forward and the semifinals and the finals?
Well, Vegas has always been a good team. I thought last year they were fantastic. And one of the reasons why I think Vegas is so dangerous is because they have what I consider to be the sixth woman of the year in De'Erica Hamby. She is so tough, and she's just relentless. And she is just, to me, one of the best players in this league. And it's not talked about a whole lot, but we're starting to hear her name a little bit more, obviously. But she being able to bring a player like her off the bench is what, to me, is so important, because in playoffs you go maybe 6 or 7 players deep, and her coming in scoring 20, 25 points a game is what most teams aren't seeing. And I think that that's the big difference in what Vegas can offer and why they will probably be in that championship game, that championship series, is because partly of De'Erica Hamby, but obviously Asia Wilson has been having a phenomenal year and obviously up for in the MVP contention conversations. But they're just solid. They've been under Bill for a couple of years. They know each other. Everybody is playing their role tremendously. Danielle Robinson is back playing her game and coming in off the bench as another player that's just coming in, just impacting the game right away. And that is what you don't see a lot throughout the league. And that little small detail, I think, is what may can edge them in the championship. But Seattle's also playing well. And Breonna Stewart and Sue Bird didn't play last night. So that's another factor that I kind of take into play. And I don't know if 1 and 2 seed means anything in a bubble. It's no home court. So that's probably why they felt, you know, maybe we can rest a player and get them ready for playoffs and just kind of get them focused in to see what they're going to expect from Vegas.
You know, you transitioned into, you said you feel like Hamby is your sixth woman of the year, sixth player of the year, however you want to phrase it. So I'm going to put you on the spot for some other awards. Is that okay? You ready for this?
Sure.
Okay. And Christy, maybe you and I can go back and forth and ask her a different category. But you kind of, you started to go there about Asia being a candidate for MVP. Does she get the MVP in your mind, or is there someone else?
I think that Asia is I mean, she's absolutely fantastic and phenomenal, and she has been a beast and unstoppable this season. But for me, I also think that Breonna Stewart has been playing out of her mind. I think that the moves that she's making is jaw-dropping for me. Asia is solid, and you don't want to not talk about a player like her, especially with the numbers and leading the league in scoring. But Breonna Stewart does things that you're like, wait, like, did she work on that, or did she get that naturally? You know, I'm in my house like, oh, my gosh, you know.
And was she just coming off an Achilles injury, yeah, you know?
And I even had her up for comeback player of the year and MVP, because who can come back off of an Achilles rupture and play the type of basketball that she's playing? I mean, you can throw it to her rehab and her surgeons, but saying that they did a good job. But Breonna Stewart has been completely unbelievable. And when you think about teams missing players, I don't think Seattle can win without Breonna Stewart. And that's how I look at MVP candidates. Do I think that Vegas can win without Asia Wilson? I think De'Erica Hamby steps in that spot. You know, I try to attribute MVPs to a team that cannot win or cannot play as efficiently as they need to without a specific player. And for me, that's Breonna Stewart.
And when you're talking about MVP, Courtney Vandersloot is also in the list of players who have been mentioned for MVP this year, and you're very familiar with her. But who else besides those three would be in the list of players to consider for MVP this year?
It's really unfortunate, and I think the MVP goes to one of the top two teams, which is crazy. And that's why I told Lisa I had to come up with an all-dog team, because there are players in this league that don't get as much recognition because their teams don't make it to the postseason. And Arike Ogunbowale is probably my top one, if she was able to make it to that one or two spot, because she's unguardable. Nobody can stop her. And I think that it's unfortunate. She's on a young team. They're growing. And I do think that they will be dangerous in the years to come because of her in particular. But if I had to pick somebody that's not in the playoffs, it would be her. Courtney Vandersloot, definitely, with breaking all the records with the assists. 18 assists in one game is unheard of. She prides herself on being a point guard, and she takes her moments to score when she feels it is open. And that, to me, is she's Sue Bird. I mean, we talk about comparing them, but she's breaking the bar, and she's setting it really high for the next point guards to come. And she's even challenging Sue in a sense. Sue has some years on her, and I think that she's up and coming, and she definitely is in an argument for MVP. But to me, it's one of the top two teams that you have to kind of give that to, because it has to be a player on one of those teams that have set the bar and has lifted their team to be in that one or two spot.
Right. So we go from MVP to a first-year player. Who you got for Rookie of the Year?
I'm going with Crystal Dangerfield from Minnesota. She is unbelievable to me. I think that her play in stepping in with Odyssey Sims being out, Lexi Brown dealing with a couple of injuries, she has just been – I mean, her numbers are crazy. She looks confident. She's playing extremely well. And Satu Sabli would have been in that argument too. They just happened to drop out of the playoff conversation. But for me, it's Dangerfield. And I think that the confidence that she plays with, she looks like a veteran out there to me. And she's leading a team, and they're not fighting for a playoff spot. They're in the playoffs. And I think that she played a huge role in that.
And Kennedy Carter is also a player who is well beyond her years in terms of her maturity and poise and killer instinct. And I think she could be on the dog team too.
Oh, yeah.
But with her as well, I know she missed six games with her ankle, but what do you see in her?
She is another player that can be on the all dog team, but I think Kennedy Carter, she was trained well. She put in the work, and I feel like now players kind of know what they're going to expect when they get to the league, because they have workouts that they can do with some WNBA players before the season can start. And I know that she was trying to, you know, working out with some of the players that I know, and before the WNBA season was maybe coming or not coming, but she's just confidence. And I think that that's one of the number one things that players, they don't put enough time into the mental. And I think she has that mental capacity to be able to handle and know that players can't guard her. And that's 80% of the work to me. All 122 players in the league are there for a reason. And to me, it's what separates players is confidence and mental. And to me, she has that. She's not afraid, and she'll go up against anybody. And to me, that is why she's going to have longevity in this league.
Last one I want to ask you about, and there's all kinds of awards to hand out. I'm not sure if you're prepared for this one because you didn't really give it to me on your list. So I might be putting you on the spot. I'm going to take a risk in doing this. Coach of the Year, which to me was one of the toughest choices this year to pick. Who do you have?
I think a lot of teams have been coached extremely well. And I give so much credit to all the coaches and such a hard, the hard job that they had within the bubble and having to do scouts every other day. That is extremely hard. But for me, the coach of the year, without a doubt, is Mike Tebow. And the reason why he is because he's missing Deladon. He's missing LaToya Sanders. He's missing Natasha Cloud. Ariel Powers is gone. Christy Tolliver is on another team. He's missing a whole front line. And to make it into a playoff spot after you're missing the league MVP, another MVP that you signed, one of the top defenders in LaToya Sanders, to me, Christy Tolliver, one of the top point guards in the league. Ariel Powers, just a go-getter, slasher, a player that's just going to go get a bucket. To me, it speaks volumes on what he has done with that team, and I don't even think it's a comparison on who should get it, and Mike Tebow, to me, is the coach of the year.
Wow.
Nice. Okay. I love it.
I love that too. I love the pick too, because I think a lot of people, and I'm sometimes guilty of this, you look at the top of the standings, right? And sometimes, as you were addressing, sometimes that's where your rookie of the year is, or that's where your MVP is, or that's where your coach of the year is. And, you know, I picked Cheryl Reeve, but I did consider Mike Tebow as well, just because I felt like Minnesota finishing in the top four, kind of in a similar story along Tebow's lines, is that they overachieved a little bit with players that you don't really know a whole lot about. And, you know, with Sylvia Fowles only playing 7 games in the regular season right now, I felt like they also exceeded expectations. But like I said, there's so many, right, Christy? There are so many coaches that you could pick this year and really not go wrong with.
Yeah, no question about it. And definitely Mike Tebow, at the beginning of the year, you know, when they went 3-0, well, before they went 3-0, I had to do like a preseason, and I had Washington very high, and he sent me a text and was like, really? Like, you know, like, are you okay? But I just have so much faith in his knowledge and his tactical sense of the game. And he has empathy for his players, so he understands what they need, and he understands that a lot of these young players are in a position where they have to rise up, and they did that on and off the floor, and he has empowered them to be their very best. So I concur, Mike Tebow being coach of the year. I mean, they started out the year 3-0, ended the year winning 5 of their last 6, and he just had them prepared. But I also see the point with Cheryl Reeve, because wow, I've had her like on my side eye all season, and just watching her do her job there in Minnesota, she's been magnificent as well. So yeah, a lot of viable options. Derek Fisher as well. So yeah, a lot of pieces.
Bill Laimbeer.
They're fantastic. And you know, players stepping up for Mike Tebow. You just think about Myesha Hines-Allen. To me, she is just unbelievable. A player that barely got off the bench last season, coming out with a 30-point debut and just kind of being consistent throughout the year, to me is just, it speaks volumes on how much intricate detail is paid to all of the players. And for her to have that confidence after she's not really playing much last season, she's cheering most of the time. And when her number is called from Tebow, that she respects him. You know, it's not anything bitter. She knows that it's her time. And I think she came and she answered the call.
Yeah.
Hey, so just real quick to wrap up, Chantel, and make a quick prediction for us. And with the finals prediction, we're going to jump ahead from the first round to the finals. Who you got?
In the finals, I'm going to go with the matchup from last night. I'm going to go with Seattle and Vegas. I think that their teams are seasoned. They're used to playing with each other. Seattle pretty much has everybody back. And that's what's going to be dangerous to me. I think a lot of times you can do a one-game matchup and say, oh, I think Vegas might beat Seattle today. But in a 5-game series, I think that Seattle – with the experience that they have, especially with Sue Bird on that team and knowing how to win, they're going to be really, really tough in a series. And I think that Vegas is also another team just because their bench is so strong. So that's my matchup for the finals.
I love it. And, you know, I said that you're one of my favorite people to work with. I've got two of my favorite people to work with Christy and Jantel. Very, very blessed to have analysts. But you know what? I think you see, you might know this next person, our next guest, Jantel. You got a message for Christy Tolliver coming in?
Hey, Christy. Just that I miss her. Yeah. I mean, I love playing with her. I feel like I played my best basketball when I was with Christy. And that was probably that was our championship season, and I won six women. So she brought out the best in me, but she probably doesn't know that I feel that. But I always say if I could just one day just get back with her before I retire, maybe I could see an all-star appearance. I give her a lot of credit.
Well, thank you, Jantel. You were awesome. You're now off the hot seat, and Christy is now on our hot seat, right? So you did great, and it was great to connect with you again. Keep rehabbing, okay? We'd like to see you back on the court.
For sure. Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Christy Tolliver, I don't know how many trophies you have in your trophy case, but I know that all of them are championship trophies. I know you won one at Maryland. I know you won four, I believe, in Russia. I know you have two WNBA championships, and you're also now serving as an assistant coach with the Washington Wizards. Just amazing, number one, but we love having you on here today, and obviously winning a championship last season with the Washington Mystics, and we're going to start right there, because with the Mystics heading to the playoffs after the up and down season that they've had in terms of not just being in the bubble, but also missing so many key pieces, you play for Tebow. What does that mean for him in terms of getting the players prepared for this moment?
Yeah, I mean, one, I'm extremely excited that they're in the playoffs. You know, just because I'm not on that team anymore does not mean I'm not their number one cheerleader. So definitely congratulations for them, because that's really a huge accomplishment when you look at what's happened in this offseason, you know, losing the players that they had by not entering the bubble due to whatever reason, it's pretty remarkable. So I think it just shows, you know, the type of environment, the type of coaching staff, the type of players, and you know, just the quality people. You know, good things happen to good people. And so, like, them crawling their way, especially in the way that they got to the playoffs, I think is just a testament to Mike and his coaching staff and all the players that were there and showed up for the adventure that was the bubble. And so I'm just really, really happy for them. You know, I'm not surprised. I mean, I talked to Mike before they headed down there, and I said, you know, he's like, well, I don't, you know, we'll see what happens, whatever. I was just like, I don't know. Like, I mean, you guys have a great core team. You just have a great culture. You have a system. And so whoever you throw into that system, you know, the system is in place, and they've just kind of, you know, I think proven a lot of people wrong, and they obviously started the season really, really well, and then they kind of had their lapses because that's what was going to happen in this sort of situation. But then the way that they crawl back to finish the season, it's definitely well-deserved that they're in the playoffs.
Yeah, Christian, sure. I'm curious at, like, how hard it was for you to make the decision to not go and play in the bubble this year.
Yeah, I mean, it was extremely difficult. And I think, one, because I love the game of basketball, I love competing. And two, you know, going back to an old new team and not being there, not being present for that was really, really tough. And, you know, basketball is, it's not an individual sport. It's not just about you. It's about the team and the people that you're going in the trenches with. So it was very difficult for me to opt out and going there. But I think ultimately it was the right choice for me. And essentially for my team, because I don't know if I would have been, you know, certainly not the best version of myself. And so I definitely didn't want to take away from everything that they had going and then the steps and strides that they were going to make in this season. And I think, you know, everything happens for a reason, and they are where they are, and I am where I am. And I think I'm really looking forward to obviously 2021 to rejoin them and get out there and play again.
And speaking of your old new team, we're talking about the LA Sparks, and you won a championship with them in 2016. When you are speaking with them and communicating with them this summer, what kinds of conversations are you having with them and what's being said, and with Coach Fisher as well?
Yeah, well, I made a commitment to Candace as far as texting her before every game. I think I've only missed two. One, I was out. I actually finally got to visit some of my family out in the Midwest, so that was good, and I kind of, you know, was preoccupied with that. And then the other one, a condo just flooded, so I'm actually staying at Crystal Langhorne's house. She picked me up, so shout out to her. I said, I was like, you know,
she's got a great chandelier behind you, too.
She's got a great place. I wish I could, you know, have cribs with you right now. But those are the only two. So, like, I've stayed in constant communication with Candace specifically, just kind of, you know, leading up to whatever opponent they're having and just giving my thoughts and advice and things that I'm seeing. And then, you know, obviously, I've hit, you know, Fish a couple of times, just, again, doing the same thing and just making sure that everybody's good down there. You know, I've talked to NECA a couple of times. You know, I didn't want to completely just overstep in a way. I mean, I know obviously I'm still a part of the team and I want, you know, their success. But it's just different when you're not there and you're not present in, especially in a bubble situation. You know, I don't know what those guys are going through day in and day out. I've heard different things and hopefully their spirits are high. And I know it's been a grind and it's been an interesting regular season. But I think whenever you can give your two cents, especially from an outside perspective and vantage point, I've tried to do that. And I watch all their games. I try to stay locked in there, just to help in any way that I can.
Well, since you have watched all their games, I wouldn't put you on the spot to make you like pick against your team. So I won't have you do that. But what I will say is what does LA need to win the championship, and what maybe have they been missing in the regular season to get that consistency to have finished in the top two seeds?
Yeah, I mean, I think defensively they've been pretty good. You know, I don't know statistically where they've landed, but just from watching, I think on that side of the ball they've done a pretty good job getting in passing lanes, making it tough for people, getting the proper stops. You know, offensively, I think things need to get in better form. You know, I think it can get stagnant at times. Sometimes it looks like, you know, we're not completely organized. We don't know exactly what we're doing or being purposeful with what we're trying to do. So I think on that side of the ball, valuing the basketball, you know, cutting down turnovers, because once playoffs start, especially, you have to value the ball, you have to rebound the ball. You know, your transition defense has to be on point. At this point, you know, everybody scouted everybody, so everybody knows plays and whatnot. But just, you know, kind of certainly valuing the basketball offensively, and just looking cleaner offensively. It just looks a little too muddled up for me right now. But they have the players, you know, so that's one thing that with them I'm never overly concerned about, because they have phenomenal players on their team. And yeah, even the new additions with Brittany Sykes and you know, they have the talent, they have the ability. It's just a matter of putting it together and just taking your time and being organized. And that's where, you know, really like the prep and knowing your opponent and knowing what you want to do is extremely important.
When you see a player like Chelsea Gray, who has size at the point guard position and, you know, the responsibility of a point guard, what kind of advice do you give to Chelsea Gray in terms of having the table set, if you will, and organizing the offense?
Yeah, I mean, she's extremely talented. So, you know, for me, the advice is just pick your poison. I mean, just her ability offensively and what she can do and create for not only for herself, but obviously for her teammates. You know, she's in that tier of a player. You know, I think it's been good for her because she's kind of played off the ball a little bit this season as well. And you can use her in so many different ways. You know, she can post up, you know, the smaller guards. You can obviously bring her out on the perimeter and get her in a pick and roll situation. You know, she can knock down an open three, so you can use her as a spacer. So for her, it's just kind of, it's the chess match of how are they defending us? Where can I affect the game? And that can be with the ball and it can be without the ball, because you also have players like Candace, who pretty much is a point forward. You have Nneka, who can obviously advance the ball. It's kind of the same way we would with Deli. If we're getting over-pressured, Deli, go bring it up. You know, Nneka, go bring it up. So it's like there are ways around, you know, because I know Chelsea's going to get a lot of heat in the playoffs. She did last season. I know she's going to again this year. But for her, it's like she just take a breath, take a beat, and you'll get whatever you want. You just have to be patient with it.
You know, way back when, I played some point guard myself. And so I always, when I watch a game, my eyes always gravitate to point guards. And I know that, you know, you being a point guard, shooting guard, whatever we want to label you as lately, I'm just curious, when you're watching some of the guards out there playing in the bubble, what, because you're not playing, maybe you notice something or appreciate something about one of the guards out there that you might not when you're playing against them one-on-one. Is there anyone who kind of stood out to you in that way this year?
You know, I appreciate everyone's greatness when I'm playing or when I'm not playing. So I understand the talent level that this league has. You know, a player that impressed me last year because of all the minutes she got and then has continued is Jordan Canada. You know, I think she's getting better every single year. She's obviously a top defender and is going to get in you, pressure you 94 feet. You know, her decision-making has gotten better in the open court. She obviously has a ton of threats on that Seattle team, so that obviously helps. And then having Sue Bird in her ear constantly, I could just see her really making more and more strides. So for me, she's fun to watch.
And a younger player in Crystal Dangerfield at Minnesota, the upside for her game is tremendous. What qualities in that position do you see from her?
Yeah, she's extremely poised, you know, to be a rookie. And obviously I think, you know, that comes from being a UConn kid and being under Geno for 4 years. You know, her confidence level is up there, her ability to score the basketball. You know, she hasn't had such a tough curve as far as, you know, valuing the basketball, because usually in rookies, that's in the point guard position, that's what you see, you know, those little sloppy pocket passes, or especially her height, you know, her vision. But I think she's played phenomenal this year, and especially, you know, being a second round pick, you wouldn't necessarily expect her to just come right in and lead the troops, but she's been extremely impressive. And again, it goes back to, you know, that coaching staff. I mean, if you look at Minnesota's coaching staff, they're championship caliber. You know, they're obviously teaching her the right things and giving her the proper confidence to go out there and be herself. And I'm sure the veteran leadership, like with Syl, has helped a ton too. So she's been really fun. You know, I'm not looking forward to defending her next year, but it's just great for the league to have so much young talent.
Well, thank you, Christine. And I don't know if the people just listening on the audio, they can't obviously see your Zoom box, and it says Wizards iPad B on it. And I love it because it just shows like even how dedicated you are to your other job, as Christine mentioned, with the Washington Wizards, which I'm sure is keeping you busy a little bit during this downtime when you're not playing.
Always staying busy.
Well, thank you, Christy. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. I'm sorry I didn't wear my orange hoodie. I didn't get the memo.
I know. You didn't get the memo, did you?
We'd like to welcome now such a great mentor and savant of the women's game, men's game, just the game of life as well, Debbie Antonelli. We welcome you today. We're going to bring you on in with Lisa Byington and myself. Welcome.
Thank you, guys. It's great to see your beautiful, smiling faces. Getting ready for the playoffs. I know you guys are excited also.
Oh, yeah. A lot to discuss today, but we're going to start out with your Antonellis, your awards that are kind of the non-traditional kind. Let's go into that a little bit.
First of all, Debbie, I want to know, have you ever been called a savant first of all? And second of all, how long did it take you to come up with the name Antonelli's for these awards?
You know what? First of all, I've never been called that. So thank you, Christy. I'd like to add that to my resume right now. Secondly, I didn't want to call it the Antonellis. I bounced it around for weeks with the guys in the truck. Like, come on, let's come up with something. It's got to be something that's more inclusive of our game than the Antonellis. I really didn't like it, but they kept going back to like the Oscars or the Tonys. And, you know, they kept giving me all this stuff and they just thought it was easier and cleaner on a graphic. Honestly, that's the only reason why it's named that. But I will say thank you to both of you for participating and helping determine the winners, because it was quite a project and it was a lot of fun. And it really speaks to how great our game is, all the detail. And that's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to highlight the detail in our game, and I wanted to highlight some players that don't always get recognized with the big traditional awards that the WNBA offers. So this will be something that I'll be carrying forward next season into the women's college game, and I will be expecting both of you to be a part of that as well.
Well, I mean, not only did you have one committee, from what I understand, the voting was so close that you had to bring in, what, a second committee to break some ties for all these?
Yes, that's exactly right, Lisa. There is a committee that is public, and people can ask me if they want to know who they are, but then I have the Secret Six, which I will not reveal, and that committee had to break some ties. So it was a lot of fun, and yes, I mean, two committees to pick these awards, that again, speaks to how great our game is, how good the players are, how much talent there is in the league, and actually how much fun it was for people to think about, you know, who's the best cutter? I mean, who's the best screener? Who's the best in the pinch? You know, and it took its own life, really, and it was great. I mean, I'm excited about it, and I'm glad that you guys were excited about it, too.
Yeah, I was. When I got your email, I think I responded to you that this is fun, and I love the way you think outside the box. Everybody can have a rookie of the year or a freshman of the year in the college game, or an MVP and a coach of the year, but this forces you to actually watch the game a little bit more intensely and to a deeper level, in my opinion, than just looking at maybe a box score and seeing who scored the most points.
Well, if you guys are going to call me a savant, I mean, I would share that title with you all as well. I mean, you have to understand the game, right? And you have to know what I always say, the how and the why things happen. And if you don't understand the detail of how somebody gets open, or why a coach might run this set, or why the substitution or timeout, or why they advance the ball, or why they don't, I think it gives the viewer something different to learn and to look at. It also provides just a greater depth in our game. So just playing the surface, you need to take a deeper dive into how things happen. And that's what I love about the game, because I think, you know, especially on the women's side, we have such great talent. We have incredible personalities, and they have an extremely high IQ and work ethic. And that's what I want to highlight. And that's why I've been mulling this over for a while, and I'm glad that it worked out, because it was fun. Thank you for saying that, Lisa.
You're welcome, of course. You know, so we're on a time constraint, like most broadcasters are and most shows are. So you have, I think, what, 15 awards to
That's
hand
right.
out that you would like to reveal? Now, I'm going to give you the freedom. Would you like us to set you up, or what would be easier for you to just kind of cruise through? Or do you want us to go kind of award by award? What do you think?
Why don't you guys go award by award so I don't become a talking head?
You get paid to do that, so you're good at it. All right. Well, I pulled up my with the beauty of technology, I pulled up the list here, and in no particular order, let's start with best shooter.
Well, the best shooter went to Allie Quigley, and Diana Taurasi finished a very close second, and it was a really interesting list of characters that people thought were the best shooters, but clearly those are the two best, and Allie won.
And when you ask all of your committees, the two committees, of who they thought, what was your vote on that?
My vote, I had Allie Quigley on there as well. And then I also had Kayla McBride on my list. Even though I know she struggled early in the season, I see her coming around, and I know what a great shooter she is technically. She's a terrific shooter. She knows how to shoot it.
Absolutely. Well, let's go with best screener.
The best screener was Stephanie Dolson. She's a screen, she's a re-screen, and you can lose daylight coming off one of those screens, or if you run into one. And Alyssa Thomas finished second from Connecticut.
I think what in my response to you is I put Steph Dolson on there, but I said that she can be also the best and the worst screener too,
right?
Because she's called for a lot of offensive, right?
Yeah,
she's got that reputation
right.
too.
It's kind of like I always say Elizabeth Williams from Atlanta draws the most lane violations at the free throw line. I think if there was a record for that, maybe that'll be an award next year. I mean, I think you have to know the scout. You know she's got a hitch. Well, you know Steph is going to screen, re-screen. She might slide a little bit. She might put a little extra on it, but she's going to get called for at least one a game, and that could merit you being the best screener because you get away with a lot more than you get called for.
Okay, Debbie, so we got another one. How about fastest with the ball?
The fastest with the ball was Crystal Dangerfield, and Arike finished second in that one.
And your pick?
My pick was Arike. I thought Arike was the fastest end-to-end with the ball and the most dangerous with it in her hands going downhill.
Trust.
How about your pick, Christy? What was your pick?
I had Vandersloot. I had Sloot
really?
Because I just think she's so quick, and it's not just like speed from spot A to spot B. I think it's her decision making as well. Like it's not just her speed in terms of stopwatch. It's her speed with the ball and the decisions that she makes like that. So that's why I had Sloot for that one, because it's not just dribbling cone to cone or something like that and checking the speed. I think it's like you're quick, but you're also making decisions with the speed that you possess. So I had Sloot for that one.
Hmm.
Yeah. And let's go with trust at the end of games. You know, we've all played and coached and whatever, so trust is a huge factor. Who would you trust with the ball at the end of the game?
No question. It is a huge factor, especially with how close all the games are. And so the winner for who you trust the most at the end of the game with a ball in your hands was Diana Taurasi. And Chelsea Gray finished a close second. So it was really interesting that, you know, Chelsea's known as Miss Clutch, but the committees thought that Diana was who you would trust in a late game situation.
Huh. Well, I actually picked Diana as well, and just, I mean, it's, for me, I just time and time again, I think you've seen her come through, and to me, it was kind of a no-brainer, which takes me to the next category, which for me was also kind of a no-brainer with this, the best point guard who answers what you call, Debbie, the three W's, who to get it to, when, and where.
Yeah, this is one of my favorites in defining really good point guards, and this player had the most votes, so it wasn't unanimous, but Courtney Vandersloot won this one by the most votes, so I thought it was pretty obvious that she would be the winner of that based on the incredible season that she had, the record-setting year, and how much fun she is to watch based on, you know, what you say, Christy, about her ability to change pace and, you know, the three W's, who to get the ball to, when and where. You know personnel, you know who can handle off a curl, who can run the floor. If you got options like a three over here by this player or a rim run on this one, you know, if you got Quigley for a three or you got somebody for a rim run, you're probably going to hit Quigley because you got a better chance of getting three than two. So I think those are the kind of things that decision-making and understanding the game at a very high level is what separated her with the committee.
Yeah.
You allowed us to make three choices for each of these categories, which I thought was very gracious. And I think my choices were Sloot for first, Sloot for second, and Sloot for third.
That's right. Exactly, Lisa. You had the most creative responses, I have to say. You gave a reason for why, which it was awesome.
Yeah. I had Vandersloot, Bird, and Gray in that order. And, with Bird, she's just the consummate point guard. Like, if you talk about point guards, right, that's what it is. But with Gray, I just think, you know, just her craftiness sometimes, you know, it just blows my mind. You know, if it leans me back, like if a pass leans me back, I have to give a lot of credit for that because you don't see who's open. And then it's, you know, I just love a great pass. I love a great block and I love a great pass. And Gray throws some really dynamic looks to people. So.
And I like this.
And I gave you a shout out yesterday on our Mystics broadcast, and I think
they
said, "What did Debbie say on the broadcast?" I was like, "What? Shoot till your arm falls off."
Yes.
And she said, "No, it was something else about how you just go through players who are hot, you know, or something like that." You had just said it earlier in the day, but we gave you a nice little shout out yesterday.
Thank you.
It was funny.
What about a ticket selling player?
That's Arike. That was a pretty good win by her, and Diana finished second in that one as well. But Arike certainly is exciting. I mean, she's so dynamic. She's so fast. She's so fun to watch. And, of course, She led the league in scoring. So that's worth buying a ticket for.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, like Lisa said, you gave us three choices. I had Taurasi first, and then I had Arike, and then I had Candace Parker. I just think that, you know, she has really changed the game, as well as Deladon and a lot of other players, Brianna Stewart, just being 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", and possessed guard skills. I think for if I were coming up right now as a 12, 13-year-old, 6 foot, whatever, you know, I would be so just enamored by watching someone do what she does on the floor. So I would buy a ticket. Begging my mom to buy me a ticket.
You'd have to be out in the driveway with two balls working on your handle if you were going back, because you'd have to be able to do all of that at your size as well now. It's what the game is. I mean, all the tall players have to handle and pass and make decisions with a ball. More so your four player than your three, actually, if you think about it. So, yeah, if you don't have your handle, you better be working on it.
That's right. But I would definitely buy a ticket, you know, like just flashing back. I would need a ticket to just study her, you know, to know what the possibilities are. And you're not just put in a box on the block. Right. So I think that's pretty intriguing for me. That's why I had her as one of mine.
And Christy, I just want to share something. It's your son watches both the NBA and the WNBA. And doesn't little Jordan love Candace Parker? Like one of his favorites?
He loves her. And I asked him, I was like, is the reason why you love her is because she's like me? And he's like, no. I was like, okay. But yeah, you know, he got a picture with Candace and NECA, and he loved Christy Tolliver. He can do Christy Tolliver's footwork and her leaning step back. Yeah. Like, and Coach Tebow was like, yeah, you did it, like for pregame or something, you know, when we were in the gym. And he was like, yeah, watch this. This is Christy Tolliver. So he loves the game, but I think that's a testament to, you know, when you present your kids with the opportunity to watch women's basketball, you know, it just becomes basketball, you know, and there's no delineation because of gender. And he knows just as much about the NBA as he does the WNBA. And I love it. Like all of our kids, like they've just been around.
And just a little sidebar. My guys too, Christy.
Yeah.
My guys, the same thing. I mean, you know, if we had a starting five here at the Antonelli house, I know Frankie would pick Allie and Courtney because they participated in playing pig against him in my Special Olympic fundraiser. Frankie would always pick Candace because he had a chance to spend some time with Candace, and Candace really always asked me about Frankie all the time. And then Angel is a big fan of my son Patrick. He actually still, he'd probably be embarrassed for me saying this, but Angel's picture is still hanging in the bedroom of the boys. And Frankie and Patrick share a room, so they got a lot of pictures in there, but Angel still has made the cut. And then, of course, Elena Deladon, you know, I mean, we love Elena. You know, my guys would probably unanimously vote for those five. But I don't know. Patrick might give me a little issue about Arike because he knows what an incredible scorer she is as well.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to say for the all-mom team, I'd put both of you guys on it. But just, I mean, honestly, for just teaching your kids that basketball is basketball, regardless of who's playing it, if it's a man, woman, girl, boy. And so I applaud both of you as moms in teaching that.
Thank you, Lisa. You know, I had to put the picture with Candace and NECA and Jordan on a sweatshirt for Christmas. And I went to school and everything.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
He was like, So, you know, it's just those little things, you know, I think they really mean a lot. And they were just really sweet to him. So it was really awesome.
Christy, you got the next one?
I got the next one. The best cutter. And that's a tough one, though, Deb, because, you know, everybody's moving, right? But who's going hardest? Who's the best cutter?
So I'm going to give you two awards at the same time here because these two got the most different players voting. So there are more. So what I'm trying to say is that the cutter had 13 different players that got a vote. And the best mid-range got 13 different players that got a vote. And so the best cutter is actually Angel. Angel McCautry, she won the award for the best cutter. And then the best mid-range was Skylar Diggins. So it was, votes were spread across. That's why I need the super secret six to help me on a lot of this. And they did. And those two got those two awards by the most number of players that were selected under those categories. So that's pretty cool. that there was that much thought put in on who the best cutter was and for a variety of reasons and who had the best mid-range jump shot.
All good awards come with a veil of secrecy, right? In terms of the committees and stuff. So we have that. Well, we have that with you.
Telling their votes like us right now, and then we have others that are secret-sick.
Right. We got a few left. We're cruising through. Most dangerous score in the pinch. When you say the pinch, you obviously talk about the elbows.
Yeah, that would be Asia Wilson. She won that award pretty easily. Brianna Stewart finished second to that in voting.
How about best utility player?
The best utility player was really fun because this is a player that helps you win a game and doesn't need the ball to be able to do so. And Alicia Clark from Seattle won that. She's such a terrific defender, such a great leader. She does all the intangibles that makes that team really special, and she's sort of the glue. And I think a lot of people have recognized that about her game. And that's a really big award, I think, to win, because that means that you're adding value in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think she's up at the top of the list, too, for Defensive Player of the Year, just in the traditional awards that are coming up this week as well. But I love her game, and she is such an X factor for them.
We got just a couple more, Debbie. Best story.
The best story was Jackie Gemelos. She won that from her bouncing around the league a little bit, but I think probably – 6 ACLs and 5 tries in the league, or can't remember
multiple
the numbers exactly.
ACLs and surgeries.
I said she Jackie Gemelos sort of looks like and reminds me a little bit in her appearance of Diana Taurasi with the way she wears her hair and the body type that she has. And well, that's the best compliment you could give a player, right? I mean, what an incredible story, what great resilience, and what tremendous heart to really believe that she could be a player in the league. I think it's a great selection by both the committees.
Yeah, and she has a clothing company named Overcome, and that's just a testament to her mentality. So we have a couple more that we're going to get to here. The best off-season move, and there were many, but what was the best one?
Well, there were three really big ones. Angel going to Vegas, Skylar going to Phoenix, and Dawana Bonner going to Connecticut. And the committees decided Dawana Bonner was the best move. And I think Dawana had an incredible season. And it took her a couple of games to get going. And then after she got going, I mean, that really was a difference in them making the playoffs, considering they don't have Jonquel Jones. So I thought that was a good choice. And when they get Jonquel Jones back next year, man, watch out. That's a loaded team.
Absolutely. And then the last one we have here is the best two-man combo in pick and roll or a pick and pop situation.
And that was Chelsea Gray and pretty much anybody else. Candace Parker and NECA, mostly Chelsea and Parker. That seemed to get the most votes, and that's a pretty good choice too. I mean, as you mentioned before, we were talking about Candace. She is a ticket-selling player. She could probably win a lot of these awards because of the way she handles the ball and sees the floor and the way she incorporates her teammates. But that's the best two-man game based on the selections of the committee. So pretty good choice. Again, really good. The second was Bird and Stewie. And we didn't get to see enough of that this year, unfortunately. But we will in the playoffs. Yeah.
I took care of my bases, and I put Sue, Jewel, and Jordan and Stewie.
Yeah.
If I could morph those three guards, right, into one. Yeah. Covering so all my bases.
Yeah, definitely.
So
definitely.
True. I mean, again, so much talent, right? So much fun to watch. So much fun to call and break it down.
Yeah.
Well, Debbie, thanks for making this fun. Thanks for forcing us to look at the game maybe in a different way. And as any good true savant, you weren't wearing the orange hoodie, but
oh, yeah.
You did get the orange tee. So way to go.
There was no communication before I realized that the color or the power was orange today. So I'm glad that I put this on. And it's too hot in Charleston, South Carolina for the hoodie right now. So this is I'm perfectly fine with this. Thank you, guys.
Well, great minds think alike. Thanks for being on, Debbie.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Around the Rim. Check out more podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app.